But we're back here, Real Race USA Live. And I don't know if we're in North Carolina. I don't know where we are. We're in Florida. We're going to bring Perry Brown in with us right now. Late model driver, other kind of racer, dirt racer, whatever. You name it, Perry will drive it. Perry, where are you at tonight, man?
I'm at the house here in Riverview, Florida, working on the car right now.
Riverview. Now, that's closer to us.
See? That's where your old stomping grounds, man. Yeah. What are you talking about?
That's right.
So, Perry, you went up there to North Carolina to the Do the Pass Series race, and now you're leading the points, I see, after two races.
Yeah, we didn't know that that was how it was going to turn out, but, I mean, it's only two races, but we'll take it for right now, you know.
Yeah.
We had a better car than what we showed at Hickory. We just got turned around late in the race, and don't know what we could do about that. We ended up finishing, I think, 10th up there. But
now, where was this race?
The first one was at Hickory Motor Speedway,
right?
And then we've had the second one. You know, a couple weeks ago, it was held at Watermelon, which is
Watermelon Capital.
Yes, sir.
No, did everybody stay on the track? They got no back wall over there.
No, there was a lot of people trying to farm.
I remember. Go ahead.
It looked like a real easy place for that to happen. It didn't take a whole lot, and you'd be off the track back there on the back straightaway in no time.
You get out in the cornfield, man. They got to come out and get you out.
Yeah.
But
some of them got back out on their own.
Yeah.
They pulled out on the track in front of everybody. So
what's it like with what's the past series deal like? I mean, competitively wise.
Oh, it's I would say it's probably, just from my aspect, it's probably one of the toughest, if not the toughest, most competitive series in the Southeast right now, or maybe the whole East Coast, because I know they're Northern. When they're in the North, they got a past South division and a past North division, and when you put them both together, I mean, you got the best racers in the country. I mean,
Bubba Pollard, Ryan C.
You got Ben Rowe, Mike Rowe, coming from up north. Clark, some of the names. And then, all the South guys from Florida to North Carolina. You know, you name it. But I think at Hickory, don't quote me on this, but I know there was so many cars that a lot of people had to go home.
Right.
And qualifying, they locked in the top 20. And I think we qualified 12th or 13th. But from 1st to 20th, I think it was like a tenth and a half.
Yeah, that was the Easter Bunny 100 or whatever, right?
Easter Bunny 150.
150, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, that's cool. So, now, I got to throw this out because I'll forget it if I don't.
Okay.
Darrell Shelnut finished last. Did you get a chance to talk to Darrell?
Yeah, actually, I've gotten to know Darrell here in the last year or so because he runs a Hamke chassis like myself, and we actually pitted next to each other up at Cordell, and he would have probably been a real contender for that race because he qualified really well and gotten a little mishap there at the start of the race. I started right behind him. I started sixth, and he started fourth, and he kind of got touched a little bit there going down the back straightaway, and it, like I said, it don't take a lot there to get pushed off the hill, and it kind of ruined his night. So
you think that's what he would have said? Would Darrell have said touched?
Yeah.
I don't know. He wasn't real happy, but
yeah.
I guess he had a time to down until the race was
over. Yeah, you guys don't want to get him too fired up.
He seems like a real good guy.
Oh, he is.
Everybody's got an exciting side to him.
So why did you decide, or how did it come about that you were going to race in the past South Super Late Model Series?
Well, last season, right at the end of the season, my wife's dad's side of her family, they're all from Troutman, North Carolina, which is right around the Mooresville area. And my uncle actually also moved to Hickory. And we made a real long weekend of it. I talked to my sponsor, and he was cool with it. And we went up, and it was such a well-organized run event that we were just so impressed with it. And we had such a great time, and we had a good run going in that race, too. And we just kind of fell in love with the little series they had there, and you know, and then they just expanded it this year, and that kind of got us hooked on the deal.
That's cool.
So the Motor Mile Speedway is coming up, right?
Yep, that's this weekend, Motor Mile Speedway. Never been there. I'd never been to Watermelon either, but never been there, and looking forward to that. It's going to be not a cheap run, with as cheap as diesel is right now. So, but
where'd you do most of your beginning racing at? You're from Riverview. What'd you used to race? Where'd you used to race at?
I started out at DeSoto Speedway in the modified series. I started actually out in go-karts before I ever started. That was the first thing I ever raced, and then that's the first race car I ever drove, was the Florida Modified, right at DeSoto Super Speedway. That was my first place I ever raced, and that would be considered my home track.
Yeah. Who's your sponsors, besides Hamke?
Powell King Pallets is my primary sponsor. They're out of Jacksonville, Florida. They serve the whole Southeast. They've been in business since 1977, and I couldn't do any of it without them. And not only is he a sponsor, but he's turned into one of my very good friends, and appreciate him a lot. Another one of the sponsors is Evergreen Development. He's out of Tampa, Florida, and I think you guys know Jay. He also lets me drive his dirt modified, and he's the other sponsor. I've got Precision Suspension, helps me with the shocks, and Tiger Rear Ends, 5-star race car bodies, and Split Second Towing helps us out a little bit, and they're out of Tampa, Florida.
That's cool. So let me ask you, why did at this race up at Watermelon Capital, why did David Reagan start at the rear of the field?
I didn't even know he was in the race, but I found out later because I asked the same thing, and I guess he didn't make it in time for qualifying. They had somebody else qualify the car, so
I gotcha.
Obviously, if you don't do that, you're not allowed to start. So he had somebody qualify it, and they just let him start scratch.
Yeah, he managed to make it to fourth. Now, what motor was he running?
I'm not really even sure.
I gotcha.
I didn't.
Some expensive one, I'll guarantee you.
Do what?
Some expensive one, I'll guarantee you, with all that money he's got behind him.
Yeah. Probably a pretty good chance. I know Kyle Busch's car was the one that run. Kyle Busch was there too, but I guess he was coaching his driver on the radio. But
who was driving for him?
I'm not even sure the
okay.
guy's name. It's a friend of his from out in Vegas, and I guess Kyle Busch got a pretty stout super late model team. They're going to run all over the big races in the late model division, and I just knew they were there, and I heard they had some real expensive motors too, nonetheless, but they were really strong, and he just kind of faded there a little bit towards the end.
Yeah.
What is the motor of choice in the past series?
It really depends on what track you go to. It looks like to me, when we were at Hickory, the motor of choice by most of the bigger teams was the crate engines.
Right.
Like the ASA type engines.
Right.
Because they get such a good weight break. But then you go to the bigger tracks, and it's either the, you know, spec motors or the big dollar 9-to-1s.
What spec motors do they allow in pass?
All of them. I was reading the rule book the other night because I was kind of curious about all their motor, because they apply different weights for different motors, and as far as their spec motor goes, from what I remember reading, it was the guy from Indiana. I'm not real sure how to pronounce it. McGunigal.
Right. Yeah.
Hamner.
Yeah.
Florida spec.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Scott Reed here from the past series, the head tech official. We're going to talk to him in a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I see all the engine rules here now, and looking at them, they pretty much let them all.
Yeah.
What motor you run?
The first two races, I've run progressive spec.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
So what? Now you're gonna run this whole past series? You're gonna try to run the whole deal?
Well, that's the dream to do that, but we're just taking it kind of one race at a time, you know.
Right.
The way the economy is, and we're just letting the cards kind of fall where they
yeah.
they may. And if we can, great. You know, but if we can't, we can't. But that's our plans as of right now.
So what else do you race, Perry, these days besides in there? Do you race in your own state of Florida much?
Oh yeah. I mean, I was real excited about. We were going to try to run all the Twin 50s at Inverness. We went to the first set they had up there, and then I found out here about a week and a half ago or something they canceled them. I guess. I just heard through the grapevine. I don't know that to be for a fact, but I heard they'd canceled all their Twin 50s. But and we were going to try to hit some of the Punta Gorda shows and some of the AACS races and maybe a couple at Auburndale.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, we like I said, you know, we just fell in love with that past series, and you know, that's not the only thing we want to race. We definitely want to race here. I mean, that's where we're from, you know. So, but the past series is also a growing series, and you know, everybody supporting them there. You know, hinting around about talking, moving further and further south, and trying to make it a bigger, even bigger series. So,
well, that would be good.
Yeah,
that would be good.
Yeah, do they race anything in Florida?
No,
no,
not yet.
Georgia,
not yet.
North Carolina, yeah, they're in Georgia.
Georgia,
Cordell and Green and Braselton.
Yeah, they got a couple, I think, in Georgia, and not in Florida. But I guess they'd have to find somebody to get with them to.
They have to get permission, man.
Yeah, exactly. Get permission.
Yeah, they've got to talk to the Don over there at DeSoto Speedway first.
DeSoto? Oh, get out of here.
They got to talk to John, man. Nobody comes south of Highway 64 without talking to John Sapricone first.
Yeah, we like John. John's fun.
Well, Perry, I mean, I'm happy to see that you're doing good out there. I mean, Jack was asking me if I've ever raced with you before, and I told him I didn't know. I didn't recognize the name, and then looking at you here from Riverview, Florida, it would be odd that if we never had. But
that's cool, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
You ever raced with a guy named Bonehead?
I've raced against a bunch of them. I've never raced with none of them.
That would be me. That would actually be written on my car, so you'd know.
No, I don't think I have.
All right.
No.
All right, Perry. Sponsored by, give us those sponsors again, man, before we get out of here.
Pal King Pallets out of Jacksonville, Florida is our primary sponsor. And Evergreen Development from Tampa, Florida. And, you know, the rest of them. Tiger Rear Ends, 5-star Race Car Bodies.
Hamke.
Hamke Race Cars. He's been a big help here this year. We took the car up and, you know, Hamke, you know, just he don't know me from anybody else, but it's obvious that he don't hold nothing back from any customers. You know, he put me right in, and obviously he didn't hold nothing back because we won our second race out with him. So, you know, I thought that was pretty cool that you know, you buy one of his cars and you get his service. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So when's your very next race?
If we can get off work, we're going to go to Motor Mile this weekend. That's a pretty good pull, but we're going to try to get all the work done this week and get up there and not race car work. Unfortunately, we all have regular jobs. So
yeah, there you go. Well, good luck this weekend, man. I hope you make it, and we'll be watching to see how you do, Perry Brown from Riverview, Florida, man. Thanks a lot for spending some time with us here on Real Racing USA, Perry.
Take it easy. He's got 420 points, and so does second place. 418 and 414. Man, they're close, but they've only raced what? They've only raced two of 14 events, so still a lot of racing to go. Looks like Perry has led 121 laps of the two races. Not bad, considering the other lap leaders or Jeff Choquette with 99. Those are the only two. You know what? You want to hear something? The two Florida boys are the ones that have led the most laps against all these other guys. Well, I've been trying to say that for a long time. You know, the drivers are in Florida. Great drivers are in Florida.
Ah, it's all in Progressive Motors, man.
Well, it could be. you know, don't go pushing that right now. You know, we're going to get enough of the motor stuff here shortly, I'm sure. So, Real Racing USA, we've been having a good time here. We just got off the phone with Perry Brown. Next, we have the official head tech of Pass Series, Mr. Scott Reed. How are you, Scott?
Yeah, fine. Yourself?
Just fine, man. Just fine. Just got off the phone with your lap leader right now, Perry Brown, and sounds like he's having a good time. And I was just making a comment that our two Florida boys have pretty much led all the laps.
Yeah, they've had a pretty impressive run in the first two events we've got in this year.
So, are we going to talk about motors with him, Jack?
Well, first of all, what you had, you know, Rob is a late model driver, super late model driver, been doing it for a long time, and you know, we were asking Perry some of the questions about that, and of course, we were talking to Perry about his just the racing in general and the competitive level at the Pass Series, and a little bit about what it's like running in that series, and we wanted to know, you know, I think Rob wanted to know like what motors you guys allowed, what are some of the, you know, what's your tech deal like, you know?
Well, we run a pretty much open motor program. Now, when I say open, we have a multiple variations of what we allow. We do a lot with weight to kind of equalize the competition. We allow spec engines, like seems to be the conversation of topic in many areas right now. We allow crate motors, high compression steel motors, like have been, you know, pretty common down that way for a long, long time. The Boyds and other ones like that. You know, we run low compression motors. 9-to-1s, 23 degrees, 18 degrees. I mean, we've got pretty much a combination of what's, you know, popular and what has been popular in Super Late Model Racing.
So how are you staying on top of these crate motors? Because, you know, down here, the crate motors, they run real good, even in the Super Late Model Racing. And there's different, we'll talk about the spec motors in a second. Go ahead with the crates.
Well, you know, I guess I have a different perspective on it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a crate program as long as it's treated like any other engine. Once you start looking at seals on anything, I think it leaves too many things in the gray areas to not looking at it. I mean, racers are very ingenuitive, and creating a seal is a lot easier sometimes than making your race car go fast.
So you guys basically just tech a crate motor? You have a way of teching certain things on it?
You know, like any other organization, we have all the stuff and all the specs from any engine. I think one of the things that's lost in engine programs is the fact that, you know, The spec engine, the crate engine thing, it's nothing really new. I mean, we've always had engine rules, and they've always been something. And, you know, you have to tech it, whether it's, you know, even when the old motors were what they were, you had a set of rules, you had a set of specs. And the spec engine are no different, nor the crate. They just, they got their own parameters.
Yeah, I mean, the crates are just such a great idea, you know, when you think about it, for the value and the money spent. But
they're half the cost of
if they take them right out of the crate and they use them. That's just the big issue.
Yeah,
is that
I got you.
Different series are letting different things go on, and you know, when we have our Lakeland Speedway down here, that's a huge, you know, half mile speedway, that three quarter mile. It's a big speedway, you know, and you have super late model race, and the guy that's in third spot has got a crate motor. It's
well,
just kind of crazy.
Just to give a little input, what I think of, I mean, the crate engine's a good option. But when you get into that, I mean, it sounds like a cheap deal if you go out and buy a GM crate for $5,000 or
yep.
Ford versions that are floating around. But, you know, you can put a $200 set of headers on a good spec engine or a 9-to-1 or something like that, or say 300. But when you get into the crate and you're limited to 400 horsepower, you know, you got to go out and spend $2,500 on a set of headers that can gain you another 5 to 7 horse. You know, so economically, it's not really any savings. And the bigger motors are really, really the real deal.
Scott. It is how much, I don't know how to ask this, but, you know, we talk to people and we get the deal like there's this car gets that, this motor gets like X number more horsepower. This one gets 20 more horsepower. This one gets 50 more horsepower. I talk to drivers and they say, you know, a lot of this has to do with how you get the car set up and how you drive the car. And you know, the horsepower is not is overblown. In other words, a lot of these guys are telling us that they think that the horsepower deal is just overblown, and people use it as an excuse for not being able to drive the car or set the car up right for that particular track. What's the deal with this?
Racing is a combination. I mean, if you've got your best chassis guy out there, you can hook up 700 horse. If you've got a 400 horse crate and you're slipping and sliding, and you ain't got your suspension on, you're not going to be any good either. I mean, it really is. I mean, you got to get your race car handling. You know, and that's one of the things we do on our series. We have probably one of the most open option packages there is in the country, and we emphasize upon that because we want a guy from Florida to race. We want a guy from Texas to race. We want a guy from Vegas to race. I want a guy from North Carolina, South Carolina to race. And if guys don't have to go out and buy something certain to a certain set of rules, I mean, it promotes racing and it helps the racer. As far as, you know, to be honest with you, we're in the day of handling, but still a good pony will get you there.
Yeah. So
there's no replacement for displacement if you can hook it up.
Well, you know, there's a variation of that, too. I mean, if you're going to run a quarter-mile bull ring or a three-quarter-mile, you know, fast, high-banked oval, I mean, obviously, you get to a big, big track, horsepower is always going to make a big difference.
But at Lakeland, big, big track, the guy finishes third against, I'm talking about big dogs.
Yeah,
man.
Travis Cope finished third with a crate motor. They felt they won the crate race because, Tim Russell and Jeff Choquette finished ahead of them, but they thought that was pretty good.
You know, and like you said, the Florida boys have done good. I mean, Perry dominated pretty much. I mean, he had a super good run. The young Haas boy down there was running with him, but I mean, Chiquette was running good at Hickory, but he weren't on a big motor. I mean, he was running the smaller motor up there.
Sure.
I'm sure they're running progressive.
Sure. So the bottom line is, it could it be said that there is no panacea here? There is no one-size-fits-all here.
Well, I mean, there's some argument for what you want to do. I guess if you want to go crate motor racing, you can go crate motor racing. With that said, I think the myth that it's cheaper, I think it's more of a myth because when you limit horsepower and you put yourself into one package, well, everybody's going to be, I can give you a good example, is, you know, in a super late model, you get a 600 horsepower motor, you can put a good tranny in it and get by with a good piece. But if you got limited to a 400 horse or whatever crate motor package you're running, you're going to have to spend another whatever to put rollerized bearings in and all this to find that extra 2 horsepower or get that extra oil or find this other thing that's a little bit lighter. At the end of the day, your motor might be cheaper, but the pieces you have to put around it to try to get where you want to be to have an edge on your competition in the crate, it's no cheaper.
Yeah, you got to bore out the steering wheel, put the water-cooled muffler bearings in, and oversized seat covers in.
Well,
those all cost a lot of money.
You say that. I mean, when you start adding up headers and these little things, and it's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, just for the crate motors, Jack, the difference, I can't take my super late model motor out of my car, mm-hmm. okay, and put that crate motor in it. My bell housing and clutch and all that kind of stuff
don't fit.
Doesn't fit.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that they've got to go buy a bunch of, you know, and spend a bunch of money.
Hey, Scott, let's digress here now. Tell us a little bit about the, you've been with the past series, you've been involved in this whole thing for a long time. Give us a thumbnail of the development of the past series, of course, started in the north, I guess, right?
Yeah, our series started here in the northeast, and we traveled basically throughout northern New England and into eastern Canada. We've run up here. We're going on, I believe, our 9th season. Up here, we now have 4 different touring series. And we started our southern series in, we're in our 3rd season now, so what's that put us at, 2006? So yeah. It's been very, very successful. We've had competitors from all over the country run, and we're excited at its possibilities, and we're entertaining some expansion possibly in the near future.
What are these cars that look like dirt late models on the asphalt about?
Those are our Outlaw late model series up here. I mean, it's a small thing. We brought them on. It's kind of a little bit lower butt kind of a deal. And we run them with 2 barrels and just crate motors up here in a very, very small area up here in New England. And it's kind of a more restricted, lower budget kind of a deal.
Right. I like those wedge bodies, man, on the asphalt. It always looks good.
Absolutely.
You know, wedge bodies, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good concept, but it's not really readily taken amongst the deal. I mean, we do real good with the ABC because that's what we run on most everything else, but it's hard to get that wedge deal to take off in many places in the country.
Now, we always have to ask this question out of tech guys. Now, you're in charge of the whole overall tech deal, north and south, right, Scott?
I'm the main head tech. I mean, everything that I do and is gone over and goes through Tom Mayberry, the owner and the president of the series. But, yeah, I'm pretty much every division we got and every series we have, I kind of oversee it secondhand, yeah.
All right, Scott, here's the question of the day. We always ask the head tech guys of series this. We'd love to ask this question. Who are better cheaters, the guys from the north or the guys from the south?
Everybody. If he's a race car driver, he's trying.
See, I try to tell, I try to say that to people, and they deny it. We had a lady last night that just denied that her guys in her class are not cheating. And I said, you know, if there's five of them, four are trying. The other one's succeeding.
Well, you know, it's a tough deal. I mean, no matter what we do on our end, we're trying to take care of the gray areas because there's ingenuity created every day. And you know, for this job, every day you've got to try to learn what's new and what's innovative, or if not, you fall behind. And I'm not saying that everybody's trying to cheat. For the most part, all the competitors we deal with are a great bunch, but everybody's always trying to find an advantage, and that's part of what a racer's trying to do, and our job is to keep them within the line.
Yeah, it seems to me, just, you know, looking at it more from a fan perspective, I think that whole word is, like, misused, totally inappropriate. You know, it's like, all these guys are trying to do is they're trying to take it to the limit and get a competitive edge within the boundaries, and sometimes you go over it. Sure, there's guys every once in a while in any sport that are going to just blatantly try to blow it out, but those guys usually get caught.
Well, you know, I mean, Tom Avery, the president of the series, is a racer. He was a racer. I mean, I got to know Tom and be a friend with him competing against him, and I obviously have got many years behind me, too, and we both kind of took a step back from wheeling them, and I still like working on them. But, you know, we did that because we saw some things as competitors that we wanted to see on the racetrack. And every time we have a race, we go as a race fan, too. We always go to see, hopefully, the next race is the best race we've ever seen. And, you know, sometimes it ends up that way. And, you know, I'm no angel. Hey, I've been caught before, and I admit it. But I guess if I weren't cheating, I wouldn't know where to look either. So
maybe, right. Is that why Mayberry got you, Scott?
No, me and Tom are very good friends, and there's a lot of respect there.
Yeah.
And we've competed against each other, and we both are a very competitive sort, and we were fortunate. A lot of competitors can't come out of there as good friends that way, and we both have an utmost respect for what we want to do, and we want to promote racing the way that it should be done for a racer. We want racers to come and feel that they're getting a fair shake, each and every one of them. Doesn't matter where you're from or who you are or what you're driving. And at the end of the day, you know, as long as we know we've treated everybody fair and everybody feels they went home that way,
right?
You know, we do our best. And, you know, we're not perfect. We learn every day. And if I sat here and told you that I was perfect and I didn't learn from that, then I'm not doing my job.
Most good tech guys were seasoned cheaters.
Oh, now, Rob.
Well, they were. That's where they became. Just like he said, he wouldn't know how to be a good tech man if he didn't know how to cheat first.
Yeah, but you know, the sad reality is I can give you the old racist thing is, well, I wouldn't have cheated if everybody else weren't cheating.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reality is, and this is the real truth, the reason I stepped away from driving, and I stepped away from driving and I ended up becoming a car owner because I couldn't get all the way over here. But the reason I stepped aside is because I felt and I knew for a fact that, you know, I was in one of those deals where they were soaking tires left and right. I refused to do it because I drew the line at that. And then I quit racing because it says if I can't try to find a way, if I can't even be competitive trying to play straight up, I don't want to play this game no more. Or else
you were in the wrong thing.
Well, you know what? I mean, you don't need to be. If you got enough good people, it can be right by the line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never soaked tires either. I never wasted my time.
So now you got, 15 races left, 14, 15 races left? Do you guys make up races if you get rained out?
We do if we possibly can. Actually, we've got 12.
12 left?
Yeah.
Well, we've got 12 on our Southern Series, and we've still got 12 on our North Series, plus I've got Outlaw and other events. We've got over 30 still left on our schedule this year.
Yeah.
Do you run the Outlaws at the same time that you run one of your other series?
No. We try to keep every event separate so we can have our primaries there. Myself, Tom Avery, and two or three of our other officials are at every event we have in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have
Outlaws, Modified, Sportsmen's, and North and South Late Models. That's a lot of racing.
Yeah, it's good stuff, though. I mean, you get to meet a lot of people, and that's one thing about this sport that I love is that we do have a big family. Even sometimes there's little family squabbles. It's one of the best groups of people that you'll ever meet.
So how is your Modifieds, your modified series?
A lot like your Florida Mods.
No, I mean car counts-wise. I hope you're not the same problem we got. We can't get none to show up.
We had a light count at our last event, but it was one of those deals like everybody else on the East Coast. I mean, it was predicted bad weather again, so I mean...
Right.
It makes it tough. The economy's a little tough right now, but I don't think that's the reason. I mean, I think, you know, we're hovering with them. I mean, they're okay. I'm not really worried about them. But, you know, up here when you're in the Northeast, I mean, we got the added 15th burden of heat and oil.
Right.
And, you know, that's added a quite a heavy burden on everybody up here in the Northeast this year.
So Let me ask you this now. Do you see, Scott, do you see that, that there's going to be, like, we have an ABC body deal, and the bodies are pretty much all, this makes Rob sick when I talk about this, but the bodies are, everybody's kind of gone to the ABC bodies. Do you think that it's actually possible that there's going to be a unanimous deal here in getting everybody on the same motor packages? Is that even possible?
I think it's a concept that's been played by many organizations. We strive to do what we do. I mean, if I've got a guy that's got a 9-to-1, I want to let him race.
Yes.
If I've got a guy that's got a spec engine, I want to find a way to let him race. Guy's got a crate, I want to see if he can race. In our Northern Series, if a guy's got a low compression steelhead motor, I want him to race. If I got a Florida guy that's got maybe a good Boyd motor still kicking around with a 14-to-1, I want him to race.
Right.
And, you know, I think, you know, it's a tough thing. But one thing I can say is throughout our sport, not just super late models, not late models, but we got to get it so guys can race what they got.
That's right.
You know, and it's this racing thing's not cheap, but it's a passion. And, you know, it gets discouraged into teams when you get ready, and then 2 years down the road you got to regroup. And then 2 years down, you get a regroup. And you get tired of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff out there, new and used. Why can't a guy pick up a good used motor and run it?
Exactly. You know, and I think that's one of, I mean, this is not, I don't, doesn't affect you guys at all, but, you know, when those guys picked up the Super Cup, using the steel-bodied Hooters cars, ton of them sitting around, them guys said, hey, let's throw a little thing together here. You know, they're not trying to conquer the world. They're just trying to give those guys that own those cars sitting around a place to race.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of falls in the same gig.
Like they should do something with the old Cup cars.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with all them?
Yeah. Well, but the problem with that is what happens when they're crashed.
Yeah. That's true.
A late model, you can get a brand new chassis for $3,500.
Yeah.
But when you got a Cup car when it's crashed, then what do you do?
Yeah. It's kind of a bent piece of lead.
You know,
boat anchor.
It's a concept that a lot of people have tossed around. But, I mean, you take a look at the body deal. It's just like I talked to a team that runs Busch East that runs with us. I just talked to him really tonight. You know, he spun out and just touched something with a corner. He says, my crew will have that fixed in 20 minutes if that was my Busch East car. He says, I'd have $3,000 bill sitting there from the body shop. And with the old Cup cars, you got the same issue.
Yeah, that's how the Hooters were. When are they still metal-bodied cars, Hooters Pro Cup?
The new ones aren't. I think they're on the composite.
Yeah, I remember when they were
the old ones.
They had the same problem too. You know, guys showing up, their cars are still smashed up a little bit from the last race because they couldn't afford to get them all bondoed up and everything.
I tell you what, Scott, when all the super late model series around the country, when you guys all decide to have your big symposium and get together in some secret location, let us know.
Well, you know what? Here at the Pass Series, we kind of do our own thing.
Yeah,
I hear you.
Our world, whether it's right or wrong, but
well, it looks good so far. You got a great looking website over there, and
racewithpass.com.
Racewithpass.com, and
who knows? Maybe I'll get a secret phone call, and I can get a couple sponsors, and I'll come a little closer to you.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, get a race in Florida. Maybe I'll come.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, if we could get a little bit of financial sponsorship, I don't know, someplace where it's warm when it's cold up here, I'd be okay with that.
There you go. All right, Scott, thanks a lot. Scott Reed from the Pass Series, thanks a lot for spending time with us tonight, man.
Thank you very much.
All right,
Rob.
Racewithpass.com.
Now, their whole deal is, obviously, Rob, as he said, they want to get people to race, whatever it takes. Bring your stuff. We'll figure out a way. Not exactly like that, but something like that, right?
That's it.
All right. So now we're let's take a quick break, just a very short break. We're going to come back with Greg Wood, who's the director of operations from the CRA series, see what we can glean about the Seal motor deal, huh? You up for that, Rob? Think you're up for that?
I want to know if he knows anything about those guys that we were talking about last night. What did they call them? The Sealed Motor Association?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to know about that?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what you want to know about? Well, we'll be right back then.
Why not?
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
CarNet.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarNet.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing, message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarNet.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, CarNet gets it done.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at
813-478-8840. Real Racing USA. Yeah, Evergreen. That was Perry's sponsor. Perry Brown's sponsor right there is a sponsor of our show. How about that?
How about that? So now we're going to go skip across the country here. I'm not sure where Greg Wood from the CRA series, Super Late Model Series. Greg, where are you at right now?
Right now I'm in Muncie, Indiana.
Muncie, home of the four-speed.
We've been all over the map tonight. We started out, actually, in Anderson, Indiana, bounced all over the country. Now we're right back in Indiana. So welcome to Real Racing USA Live. You're the director of operations for the CRA series?
Yes, sir.
What's that mean?
That means that you could find me doing basically anything from emptying the trash cans to talking to important people like you.
Oh, that was smooth, man.
Mostly with RJ and Glenn, and work on stuff for the Super Series. Plus, we actually have three other traveling series that we do a lot closer to home.
Yeah.
And also, our company is managing Winchester Speedway for the owner Charlie Shaw there. And with me being the closest one logistically to that, I do a lot of the things for Winchester.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So let's talk about the Sealed Motor Racing Alliance.
Okay.
Talk about them a little bit. What does that mean?
Well, the purpose of the alliance, I mean, Sealed Motors actually are nothing new to our company. We've had a Sealed Motor legal in our series for, time gets away, I'd say about 5 years now.
And this is a spec motor, correct?
It's a sealed motor. The way that it came about actually was RJ actually put out some feelers and kind of made an open invitation to several engine builders, or mostly around the Midwest, several years ago, to come up with a cost-effective alternative to the 9-to-1, something that would be performance-wise very similar to the 9-to-1s. But that could be built, all of them the same, by the same manufacturer, and sealed. And, you know, without having the parameters of the low compression and cubic inch and that kind of thing, build them for less money. And there were, at the time, initially, there were about three engine builders that submitted motors for the program. And a couple of them fell by the wayside, but McGonigal's, actually, hung in there. They went the first year and a half with really only one motor out there. Rick Turner was their poster boy for that program and ran their motor exclusively for almost the first 2 years before they ever got their second one out. And then it just kind of steamrolled from there. It was a real slow process, but guys started trying them out and realizing that they could keep racing and being competitive for a lot less money. And so that's been real exciting to be a part of that. Obviously, the goal has never been to do anything to eliminate 9-to-1s or anything along those lines, but just give a cost effective alternative to folks to allow them to keep coming to racetrack.
And still have some horsepower.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because to me, I think that... That's the thing. There's so many motors that are available now, and ways that you can actually go. You know, and just talking to Scott Reed with the Pass series. You know, they allow pretty much the whole gamut of motors to run, and so it allows all these different you know, levels of financial competition to be able to come together and compete. And I think if it puts it on a level playing field, then it's all good. But the price, when we talk about price and motors, the 9-to-1 costing so much, and then these spec-type motors were designed to say, okay, well, here's a list of the parts that are in these, and these are all put together, not machined, whatever, yada, yada, and we're going to put these out for $16,000 as opposed to a $30,000 9-to-1.
Sure.
The reality, though, of it is... that you have guys that are spending half of that with another kind of motor, this crate motor, and coming in and racing and being successful in super late model racing as well. $16,000, that number that they've come up with, the 16 or 17,000 that most of these spec motors that span this gamut cost, it's still a substantial amount of money for a motor, don't you agree?
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, it's that's nothing to sneeze at by any means. But relatively speaking, and at the time, I mean, it was really the performance-wise, it's going to be, you know, what is the equal of the 9-to-1? It's the crate motors that you speak of. You know, we've made allowances in our series to try to make them competitive. And to be honest with you, there are some racetracks that they can come and be competitive, but for the most part, they struggle. And I know that $7,000 price that goes out a lot of times for crate motors. I'm not convinced that people are really being able to get to the racetrack for that amount. I think that you end up leaving a lot of bolt-on pieces on the motor off that once by the time you get all that stuff added up, you're back up into the teens anyway.
Yeah, but those motors that the other spec motors are the same way. You've got to spend all that same money on bolting all that stuff up as well, other than some of them come oil pan to carburetor. So obviously your oil pan to carburetor on a crate motor is not the 5, 6, or even 7,000. It's obviously going to be more than that once you put all that on. But you know, the thing of these certain motor builders putting together these spec motors is really what the issue is with most of the drivers that I have spoke to. Okay, because they're allowing only certain motor builders to put this listing of parts together instead of allowing, you know, a guy to be able to put his own motor together. There's a lot of guys that race that do put their own stuff together and should have the opportunity to go spend, I guarantee you, the parts and stuff for these motors. If they're spending, if they're charging you $17,000 when you go to this motor builder to get it, then you can buy all the parts and put it together yourself for probably $10,000 or $12,000. Because everybody knows that somebody's got to make money for putting the thing together, for doing machine work, for this, that, or the other thing.
Absolutely. That's their livelihood.
So, right. So the guys that would rather do things themselves, they should, too, have an opportunity to be able to see the listing of what you're allowing in that spec motor and then build this motor themselves. Okay? Now,
before you
how will we seal it, and how would you get it by your tech department would be the issue.
Absolutely.
And so that's what they've always said is, well, we'd have to tear the motor all apart and make sure that they had it all and then seal it up. But I think that there should be a way that in the tech shed they should be able to tech this motor, this spec motor, and allow teams to be able to build them themselves.
What do you say, Greg?
Well, that's, you know, you certainly you have an argument there, but I tell you, the whole premise behind the sealed engine that, you know, that we went after several years ago to give the you know, racers an opportunity, the whole idea behind it was to have started out with the, you know, the one engine builder, and of course we talked with him, you know, from the very beginning. If this, if and when this thing takes off, we're going to add a builder or maybe two, but we're going to keep it very, very narrow, because as I'm sure you're very aware, with the crate motors, they've gotten into situations with allowing many different rebuilders, and they've had a lot of integrity issues. And we
that's where the tech man comes
right off the bat.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's where the tech man has to come in there. Something that was said about the past tech man that we talked to is he doesn't care what motor they have. They're going to tech that motor, okay, and find a way to keep these parameters more straight. And that's really what needs to happen is that one thing's never going to change, okay, and that guys are going to cheat, okay. Given the opportunity, they're going to cheat, especially in a motor if they think isn't going to get taken apart. When I ran the Florida Pro Series, if you finished in the top three spots or five spots, they tore the head off of your car for that money that you were going to get. And you know what? It was accepted by us. Even in fifth spot, we were going to tear our head off of our motor, okay, for that money. And that way we knew that nobody was cheating.
Right.
And today, they've to shrug off that responsibility, and where guys are saying, oh, we're having to spend all this money to put our motors together, they came up with this tech motor, the spec motor that won't have to be pulled apart, that if you've got this seal on it and it's by this motor builder, we're going to let you fly on through. And if this guy comes through, we're going to tear his motor apart.
So are those days gone, Greg? Is this like future?
Is what future?
Well, I mean, is what Rob is talking about, is this like, yeah, that's the way it was, but we're not going back there. We're going somewhere different here in the future with having more standardized stuff, and maybe guys just won't work on their cars as much as they did before, at least not on the motors.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, now, first of all, I'm just now getting caught up with you. I'm talking to two different people. Who's Rob?
Go ahead, Rob.
My name is Rob Elting. I race cars, race late models down here in Florida. I've raced for years, and I ran the Florida Pro Series back with Bert Ashelman and with Don Nerone and his series that he had in Sunbelt, and I've seen from the 9-to-1 flat top days and high compression days, okay, to where we're running now. I still run a steel headed flat top with a 750 Holley on it, and today I'm running against what would have been a high compression motor back then, which would have had a 390 on it, which is the spec motor of today with aluminum heads and all that. They get to run the big carburetor just like I do. So I'm already kind of outclassed by a motor that wasn't supposed to have that much horsepower. And now they come out, these motors got 600 horsepower, and the spec motors that are down here, at least that's what they're touting that they have. And supposedly what this spec motor was supposed to be was a motor that wasn't supposed to have machining in it. It was all supposed to be parts that were bought from the dealership, parts that were bought, and you put that motor together with those bought parts. So that kept it to where it would keep the price down, because you could buy all these parts without, you know, going to some racing place.
Hey, Greg, this is Jack Smith, and the way we've been doing these interviews, we've talked to on this show in recent weeks, we've had Dwayne McGonigal on. We've had Steve McGinnis from Progressive on. We've talked with Don Nerone. We've interviewed a lot of drivers who race, and we've interviewed last night Tim Bryant from Five Flag Speedway was on. We've had many shows on this topic, and we're just trying to get the information out from all sides of the thing, so people can take a look at it, you know, from all the different sides. And
right,
that's basically where this is. Now, of course, Rob is a race car driver still, and so, you know, he's got a point of view coming strictly from that, as well as from a media point of view. I'll tell you one question that it seems to me that, and this is a puzzlement to me, is I'm not sure how it's going to be that you're going to restrict the motor builders to a couple of motor builders. I don't quite understand that. That doesn't seem to be in the spirit of a competitiveness within the industry.
Yeah, believe me, that's one of the biggest hurdles. But we're not saying that there are only two, you know, a couple engine builders that can supply engines to our series, because there are motor combinations that are allowed to run, the 9-to-1s, the steel-headed motors, you know, all that kind of stuff is open to anybody who wants to build one, which, you know, was going to be my response to Rob, if you want to build your own motor. But there's some options out there, and actually the steel-headed motor is, you know, can be a, you know, they're cost-effective alternative to a certain degree. But as far as the sealed engines go, the whole idea behind it was, you know, building them all the same, building them, making them sealed, and if there's a problem with them, then holding the engine builder responsible. You know, and that's what we've done. And to address just one comment there, nobody in our company has taken the mindset at all that we're shrugging off you know, our responsibility for teching the motors. We do lots of tech, and we have some guys that have a lot of integrity where tech goes, and they do a lot of work and, you know, make sure that as much as they can, our cars go, you know, through straight up and everybody's on an equal playing field. Obviously, there are lots of racers who are going to do whatever they can to gain an advantage, and that's our job to try to catch those. One of the ways that we try to eliminate one of the ways around it is with the sealed motor.
Well, you know, with just to throw this in there, you guys are, like, right there, you manage Winchester, and I've never been to Winchester, but my understanding is it's a very high bank, very fast track, right?
It's a beast, yes.
Yeah, that's what I understand now. It's a scary beast. So, like, this past weekend, Lakeland USA International Speedway hosted the ASA Southeast Asphalt Tour. USA International Speedway, three-quarter mile track, has a pretty, the track is, the surface is well worn. I don't think it's quite up to five flags yet like that, but it's well worn, and I've had lots of drivers tell us that fact, you know, and as an example, Travis Cope took advantage of the weight difference, and they decided to run their crate motor. They came in third behind two progressive spec motors with a 7,600 RPM chip, from my understanding, with a 50-pound weight addition.
Right. I'd heard that they were somewhere around, put that about that kind of restriction on it.
And and interestingly enough, one of the top drivers in that deal said that he went out and one of the drivers who has many, many laps on there went out and in practice turned 21:10 was their best time that they could do in practice before they put the chip in. Afterwards, to put the chip in, 7,600 chip, added 50 pounds, he went out. His best time was 20.95. And this is a driver is pretty accomplished at this stuff. And he says that all that stuff about the progressive versus the other ones, and we talked to a lot of drivers. There's a lot of different opinions. And I'm just throwing out one, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But his point on the thing was that it's too much is made out of the horsepower differential and the difference in these motors, and that a lot of times it can be used as an excuse by somebody who didn't perform well or didn't do their homework and get their car set up and hooked up right.
Yeah, now to be honest with you, I haven't followed as closely the last few weeks your show that I normally would, with us having 3 weekends in a row at Winchester. I've been pretty swamped.
Sure.
And I don't know which driver said that. But I'm going to disagree to a certain extent there. I would agree within, you know, a few horsepower, 10, 15, you know, maybe even 20 horsepower. I would agree to that. But anything over that, I would say that the horsepower is going to stand up and make itself known, especially on a place with really long legs like USA International Speedway or Winchester Speedway.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and I was amazed to hear that he finished third. We had talked about this before.
Travis Cope.
Yeah,
we
do another show. I do a show on Monday night called Inside Florida Racing, and we'd have talked about, you know, the crates against these other ones and what they do at the big tracks. Because at the small tracks, the crate motors do really well, you know, against the super late model. But at the big tracks, we'd always talk about, you know, they wouldn't be able to do anything, and it was kind of amazing that He actually finished third in there. Let me go back to what we were talking about the tech. I think you might have misunderstood me. As I was saying that the sealed motors, when they come through to the tech area, they don't really ever get tech. They just get their seal look at, you know, and if it's built by that motor builder, then they go through. Now, I don't know about your personal deal because I'm not racing up there. I'm talking about down here with the spec motors that they have here because they have quite a few motor builders that can three or four that are allowed to build the spec motors here in Florida that I know. And me personally, I don't really have a beef against any of these motors because I don't really have an iron in the fire like these guys do now. You know, my racing days were a little bit, you know, a few years ago. And today when I race, I just like to have a good time. And if I can go out there and win, that would be great. But for the most part, I know I'm going out there just to have a good time. I don't have an ABC racing body. I run a Lightning Light body on my car, and we joke about it, the fact the reason why I haven't changed it because I haven't crashed it in 2 years.
There you go.
So
I'm with you on that.
Maybe if I tear it all up, then I would put an ABC body on it. But I like the fact that in the past series they were talking about, they let anybody come race. They have parameters, they have weight breaks, and things that they do to allow them to race. And I think that's important to keep that up. And I do think that these guys, yeah, the guys that have the money to build these $30,000, I've never had a $30,000 motor in my life in my late model. But these guys that could afford those, I'm sure that these $16,000, $17,000 motors that they're able to buy in these spec motors with the horsepower has been a good thing for them. And I think it's actually probably been a good thing, even though I've said before that it was a bad thing for cars. I think that ultimately all these different motors have allowed more cars to be able to show up, and it's allowed the car counts to climb a little bit in this terrible economy that
sure.
we do have.
Absolutely.
I agree with that.
Yeah, Greg, tell us a little bit about the series now. Let's we could probably go on with the whole motor thing for the next two.
We certainly could, and I know that it's the hot button, and if there's something specific that you want to address before we're done, I'd be glad to do that, but just, you know, in our few minutes here, we've gone a lot of different directions, and I know there's no way we can hit all those.
Yeah exactly, and we, of course, we realize that, too, and there's a lot about it. Talks about, where's the CRA, how's the series going, and give us a thing about what we can expect the rest of the year with the series.
Yeah, well, we, like almost everybody, we've struggled with Mother Nature getting things off the ground this year. We got rained out at Nashville, got rained out at Anderson Speedway, got rained out at Winchester Speedway, and luckily it worked out. We were able to just postpone it a week. Got the season opened at Winchester week before last, and so we're finally off and running, and we're looking forward to a good season. We're Bearfield Speedway week after next in Fort Wayne. Actually have all four divisions of our CRA traveling series running on that Sunday afternoon. We've done that the last couple of years, and that's a pretty fun day to be able to get all of our guys together in one place and race.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And who are some of the two or three of the hot drivers you got this year in the super lates, in your big super late deal?
Yeah, well, of course we've got returning veterans, Scott Hantz, Kenny Tweedy has hooked up, rejoined forces with Bill Rively and part of the Ken Mueller racing team. And he had a real strong run to start the season at Winchester, finished second. And they've got a series rookie, but not a racing rookie, on their team also, and Aaron Pierce has a lot of open wheel experience, race sprint cars, Silver Crown cars the last several years, and he's going to do the full season in a late model this year, and that's pretty exciting. We're really glad to have him come race with us. He's talked about it the last several years wanting to do it. He's from Daleville, so he's kind of in the hotbed of the racing around this area between Anderson, Winchester, Fort Wayne, you know, Indianapolis is not far away.
Sure.
And so we're glad to have him come with us again. Of course, the all eyes in our series right now are on the Tim Steele 16 team driven by Johnny Van Dorn, who was our Rookie of the Year last year. Really made a big splash. Gave Chris Gabehart a real run for his money for the championship and finished second. They actually came out of the box and struggled at Winchester. And so it's kind of given maybe some of the teams a little bit of hope that they're not invincible.
Sure.
And
so it's
real interesting to watch them rebound.
That's cool. So sounds like and we talked to a lot of the guys that race out there in some of our other shows, and some of the guys who cross over from the ASA late model series and race in some of those, Winchester and some of them other places. And it sounds like, even though, all over the country, of course, we're having the always struggled to get the fans to come out, but seems to be the racing is pretty good and pretty strong.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we've got good competition, well back into the field. And we really kicked off the season with a very good race at Winchester, and so we're really excited. Looking forward to another good year.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, man, I really appreciate you spending the time with us here tonight on Real Racing USA Live. And, I'm sure Rob
really
will have
I appreciate you making time for me and having us on.
Yeah. And
it was really sorry that he couldn't make it with traveling this evening. He would have been glad to spend some time with you.
Yeah, we talked at length the other day, and then he let me know that you'd be filling in for him, and I'm glad you did, and we'll be back in touch with you. And I know some of these issues are like, they're tough, and they're there's really no real answer, and we're all trying. Everybody involved in this industry is trying to move in the direction of finding an answer that works for everybody. I know
it's
all
like beating a dead animal.
Yeah, we're all trying. We're trying to get there, and we really appreciate your patience with us as well.
Well, we got to keep trying, and we got to keep trying to work together, and that's one thing that our company has prided itself in. Glenn and RJ from the very beginning. And myself and really all of our officials over the years, we do everything that we can to get along, get everybody on the same page. Of course, RJ spearheaded the ABC body program. That went better than anybody ever could have expected. And we just try to keep trying to work together and make this work for all of us. Nobody's getting rich, but there's a little bit out there. We can keep this stuff going so everybody can enjoy the sport that we love so much.
All right, thanks a lot, Greg, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you, Jack. Take care, Rob.
Take it easy, Greg.
We'll see you later.
All right.
Greg Wood, the...
Hey, you missed it, Jack, when you walked out. I basically told him that I didn't really care. Doesn't matter to me.
Oh, I know. I caught all that.
Doesn't matter to me anymore.
No, I caught all that. You're over the hill, dude.
Yeah, I'll just take whatever engine I could. If McGonagall would send me his engine and send it to me, I would put it in my car just like I told him, and I'd run it at all the tracks down here and just put it in their face.
Oh, you'd probably put it on your hood.
Yeah, I would. McGonagall, and I'd take it down to Progressive, and I'd take my car down to Progressive and show it to
There's
Steve.
A word for people like you. You know?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I'm sure, but I just hope that the guys all keep building the motors and people keep buying them. And like I said, it's turned my thinking around this motor deal and the fact that exactly what I said, it has raised the car counts, in which the super late model car counts would be really, really crappy right now had it not be for all these other motors.
Oh, absolutely. And you look around the country from at least thus far, we have really dealt with the Midwest to the East Coast, North and South. And there is a lot of super late model racing going on. There's a number of...